When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
11,000 books are published every day in the market.
Marketing is hard and it sucks. Isn't that the title of this video?
If I make the text smaller and use less pages, I get a higher royalty.
Oh.
So it's 103,000 words.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, that's a normal book.
That's actually over the limit for traditional published authors.
Yeah. So okay. Wow, you tricked us.
That's so embarrassing for you guys. He just pranked you so bad. Oh my God.
He just swerved us.
Welcome everyone to a Tutor Round podcast episode. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today, we're actually joined together with a round table of sorts with indie authors from across the space. I would love to introduce, start it off with Zach here, author of Stone and Sky.
What's going on, everybody? ZS Diamante is my author pseudonym, so if you need to look that up, I know it's impossible to spell, so ZS Diamante, good luck. But writing classic fantasy, epic fantasy adventures like the ones you remember reading.
Hell yeah. And Tanner, can you top that intro? I mean, you guys are all indie author here. You're basically competing for space in marketing right now. Not to put the pressure on, but Tanner, introduce yourself. Nice to have you on.
I wish I could top Zach. Zach, first off, that was incredible. Oh my gosh. My name's Tanner, TDORL. I'm the author of Titan's Nest, a young adult fantasy series. You know, as juvenile as it sounds, I'm setting out to write like really fun reads. And I think I've achieved that with Titan's Nest, and I'm honored to be here with all of you guys today.
Hell yeah. And Ryan, we have you. Last but not least, Majestic Hair. What is your introduction? How would you like to start your presence on this podcast?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ryan Skeffington, author of Lost Souls and the soon-to-be sequel Eternal Dreams. I am extremely honored to be on the channel. And grace y'all with my presence. Very excited to be here. I am the coolest one who writes the worst books. So very excited to kick this off.
Well, if you haven't gotten from the title, we're talking about marketing today, specifically the indie marketing challenges and the differences that we have to go offer. So us being just little old YouTubers, we know something about marketing a video, but not so much on how to market a book. And so we've come to the right place and asking the people who are currently marketing their books, or in Ryan's case, reluctantly marketing their books.
Somehow Ryan got our attention. I don't know how.
I don't know how.
Zach and Tanner tried.
Oh, like, no. They're paint, you know, what is the term? Like,
so
they're hitting the ground running. They're
it's all about knowing your audience. I sent my book to Richard and Austin, and in the very first page, right in front of the foreword, I put, there's no democracy in this book because it's cringe, and that means you'll love it. And then I said, Austin, I hope this book teeters your totter. So yeah. Knowing your audience,
he struck
hook, line, and sinker.
He actually did.
Yeah. Nice. But Rich, you put it perfectly. We're having this episode because we're having an indie series. We have a round table with actual indie authors who have the experience for people to get more knowledge about if you're trying to publish an indie book out there, or if you're just curious about the space and want to learn about more books that don't get enough attention. All of them are going to talk about their books this episode. We're going to talk about marketing in general and give some insight here from three very different perspectives, where we have Zach, who has a following on TikTok and markets hard his books and has a lot of experience at that end. We have Tanner, who is making a stop motion picture on his books, on his book Titan's Nest, and it's the coolest thing ever. And he has a lot of humor on his TikTok and on his Instagram page. Actually, hilarious stuff about Stormlight as well. I find your feed constantly hilarious, Tanner. I love it. And Ryan, again, you're just here. So we're gonna give all of you guys a spotlight we can and kind of start us off with the question of what makes marketing so difficult is this almost seemingly a necessary check mark to box off that you have to make some online presence or you have to have some sort of social media following. All of you get reached out to us on social media, have a social media page. Do you think it's necessary in today's world as an indie author to have an online presence? And Zach, we could start with you and go down the line just as we introduced.
Yes. The answer is yes, absolutely. To go a little more in depth, yes. It's impossible to... as an indie author, you can't just not have a presence. One of my biggest goals, like when Stone and Sky was coming out, it was like I spent almost a year from when Stone and Sky was done before I actually hit the publish button, just prepping and building an online presence and getting everything ready, setting up a foundation, right, before the book came out. And it came out and people were buying it and people were excited and having fun with it, which was awesome. But my initial goal, like, was I don't want to be that guy who posts on Twitter later, like, I released my book and three people bought it and one of them wasn't even my mom, right? Like, I didn't want to be that guy. Like, I wanted to sell more than three books.
Tanner pointed at himself. Tanner was that guy, it looks like. You did that?
Yeah. Undeniably, that's my situation. We can get into that as we go.
Not to point fingers. I guess we're hitting some buttons here. But no, I you gotta have an online presence as an indie author, period. Like, if you don't, you're going to have a really hard time selling books. I don't know how you would do it otherwise, other than maybe going to markets and, you know, conventions and other things and selling face to face.
How did you amass your following? Because you have a significant following on TikTok. Significant. I mean, is it 40, 50,000? Or am I completely off on that number? Did it grow?
It's 30 something, 36 or something like that on TikTok. And then 20,000 on Instagram. And then I just hit like all the 1,000 marks on like Threads. Nice. And Twitter and YouTube all at the same time the other day. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Look at these. Woohoo.
How did you go about that? Because I know for Tanner, who is trying to make a bigger presence online, and also Ryan, who maybe wants to start going out online more, like what would you say to these two and also the audience of how much effort did you have to put in social media versus writing? Because all of you just want to write. Theoretically, you could just write, not worry about the online stuff, but it being somewhat of a prerequisite, how'd you go about actually getting a following?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I would rather just write amazing books and the magic fairies of book selling would just go, wow, these books are amazing. Everybody needs to read them, right? Yeah. But I mean, it doesn't work like that. So you got to build a following. And so one of the things that I really focused on, especially on TikTok, because that's kind of where I really built everything first, was the idea of talking about books that were similar to what I was writing, right? Talking about the same idea. So I write classic style epic fantasy adventures, right? So what am I going to talk about? I'm going to talk about The Hobbit. I'm going to talk, and I like to have that fun factor in there, right? I'm going to talk about, you know, Dragonlance. I'm going to talk about the Legends of Driz. I'm going to talk about, you know, all the Forgotten Realms, all that stuff. We're going to talk about all the fun, like old school classic fantasies, and people who like that kind of fantasy come to the channel, come to the platform, and they're like, yeah, this is great. This is great. And then I go, hey, also check out my books and I already know that these people that I'm gathering, they like that style of book. They like that old school classic style fantasy already. So it's not a hard sell when I tell them, hey, check out my classic style epic fantasy adventure series, Stone and Sky. It's an easy transition from there. But people don't necessarily want you to just sell them all the time. They don't want to, hey, you got to buy Stone and Sky. It's amazing, blah, 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 right? They don't want that all the time. What they want, they want You got to tell them, right? You got to tell them that you got a book to sell. But they actually want like to know you. And so when you're talking about all these different books that you're reading and you love, and they also love those, it's a great way to connect. And then once it's time to sell, it's a lot easier to bridge that gap.
That's the tough thing with Rich and I with Patreon and stuff. Like you're Rich, you're selling besides your body, just your presence, and you're selling and our souls, but you're also, we're selling, hey, we're talking about books. And then do you relate it all to what Zach's saying there with how we have to approach things on YouTube without even selling a book? We don't have a book to sell.
Yet. Oh yeah. I mean, we talk about books in a book club style. Like it's a book club of two. Yeah. And then we sold, hey, instead of a book club of two, do you want to be book club of many?
Right.
That's our sell. It's basically people who are interested in talking and listening about books.
Yeah. It's good advice, Zach, to just kind of go, hey, what are you already interested in? Can you lean into more of, hey, you wrote this book, and is there any kind of social media presence that could make it a little bit more fun for you? Because I imagine if you're talking about things that are enjoyable, it's easier to make content off of. Because for Tanner here, Tanner, we had a talk before. Tanner is, Rich has actually read his book, Titan's
Nest. I like
his book. And look at that.
Gets a Richard thumbs up. Richard, I enjoyed it.
You're showing some preference here. You didn't read Zach's or Ryan's.
I get to it eventually.
I didn't read any of theirs. So.
But no, Tanner, I actually did want to hear about how you started your process of marketing. Like, because you didn't go the Zach route of write the book, then plan for a year of marketing, and then release the book. How did you go about your marketing journey?
Yeah, I have no idea how I wiggled my way into this call because I have no idea what I'm doing, clearly. And so a couple of years ago, I specifically said, like, I'll never be on Instagram and I certainly won't be on TikTok. Because from my perspective, I don't know any writers personally.
A hellscape for bastard people. Yeah, of course.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I didn't know anyone that's writing. I don't know any writers. I assumed that no one was doing this. And I figured if I just write the book, like, the world needs books. No one's doing this. I love to write. If I just write the book, I finish the book, like, immediately, you know, major publishing houses, massive bidding war the moment it's done, I assumed. I didn't think I was going to have to try to sell it myself.
Tanner, so, to jump, because we talked about this before, Tanner, where you were saying, hey, you heard only 1% of people that start a book actually finish. And then those people that finish, only so many of those actually, like, you're looking at the percentages going, wow, so many people don't finish their books. I'm probably one in a million. So when you send out emails to people going like, of course they're going to answer because there's not that. So you had this misconception about how many people were actually in the game.
Totally. Right. And then you get on, you know, social media and you get on Instagram and TikTok and it seems like everybody and their mom is trying to be an author. And all of a sudden it's like, okay. And then you look more numbers and it's like, I think it's like 11,000 books are published every day in the market. And so it's like, how do I stand out? How is my voice different? Because, you know, you scroll through Instagram, TikTok, and like a ton of, like, essentially, in my opinion, everyone's doing the same thing. Like most of the pages and stuff are identical. And it's like, holy crap, how am I ever going to stand out in front of these guys? And so as I tried to get my toes wet into marketing, as intimidating as it was, and as like really reluctant, I realized like the hardest part for me was accepting that just like, hey, nobody gives a shit about your work initially, right? Mm-hmm. When you first start, like, nobody knows my name. No one has any idea of the things I've done or the things I'm working on, things I'm passionate about. And so it's like, how am I going to convince these people that my work has value? And so, you know, unfortunately, like, because there's 11,000 books posted every day, it's like totally understandable that readers and consumers like have to be selective and with what they're consuming. And so I can't get mad at people. Like, they, our world, we wait for someone to validate something, right? We wait for someone that we trust to say, hey, this is really good. This has value. You should read this, whether that's a publishing house or a book review channel or an influencer, or whatever it is. And so I started asking, like, how do I get my stuff in front of these people that are going to validate my work to all these hundreds of thousands of readers out there? Still haven't figured it out entirely. I actually forgot what the original question is. I'm just rambling at this point. But
your social media presence, because this is something that just recently happened with you, Tanner, where you were having trouble for months and months to get any hits on anything whatsoever. And there's something specific you did that got you to have a somewhat viral video for the first time.
Right. So initially you know, I had reached out to some people that were successful, doing well with their engagement. And a couple people, I had two or three people that are doing well, specifically said, if you post every day for 9 months, the algorithm just takes over and does the rest. I didn't entirely believe it. I still don't entirely believe it, but I was like, well, what I'm doing isn't working. I kind of do like anti-marketing almost, where it's like, hey, I don't want to be here. You don't want to be here. You should buy my book regardless. Which isn't super effective, I think.
That would that worked on us, I guess. So.
Yeah, that's true.
By the way, all your books, right? For anybody that hasn't, here's all their books. We got Lost Souls, Ryan Skeffington, Stone in the Sky, Z.S. Devante, and then Titan's Nest by Tanner here. TD Oral. Sorry, just want to feature. We're going to talk about their books later in the episode as well, to give you a little snippet and blurb. Go check out all their books will be in the description below. Go give them a shot. Very worthy of them. Although Rich has read Titan's Nest, can vouch for it. We could vouch they're all great people and worth the shot. I've read the chapter one of Ryan here, so I feel like I've basically read all of your books, and we'll put the stamp, because why not? We give full approval. They're amazing books.
Yeah, why not? Becomes cheap for us.
Yes.
Go jack up the price real quick.
Yeah, I gotta go get that why not sticker for the front of the book.
Yeah, feel free to take those quotes. But yeah, Tanner, when you went and did the 9 month of posting, what'd you find out? Was that true? You post for 9 months, yes, all of a sudden you just make it?
So rudely interrupted. Yes. I also kind of made like a shift, and it was just a trial and error. I was just throwing anything at the wall, seeing if anything would stick. And I saw the greatest swing in engagement when I started to just start doing like original content. I wasn't trying to do like what the trending audio was. I wasn't just like copying people's things. I certainly wasn't dancing, not yet. and once I started doing original content, I started to have, you know, higher engagement. And I think people that, you know, like I made a Stormlight joke that did super well. And I've just started pushing harder on this like stop motion project that you mentioned, because in my humble opinion, it's really cool content. We're building everything by hand, and we're building all these sets, and we're building this world of Titan's Nest physically. And so the more I've pushed that, I've just seen increase in engagement. And so I don't know for sure if it is in fact like I posted every day for 8 or 9 months, however many days it was. Or if it was that I made a swing to content that people are more interested in.
And it made you stand out too, because Rich can attest for us, you're doing the stop motion project, which is other indie authors aren't doing that. For Rich and I, at least.
Why aren't all indie authors doing stop motion?
They all have the time, really, right? It's super easy. And your sets are incredible. Everyone go check out Tanner. Their social media will be in the description as well. You can check out the social media and content they're talking about right now. And where Rich and I, would you say for our channel here, hey, we provided like, oh, there aren't many duos on BookTube. It's kind of
when we started, I guess.
When we started.
We've now seen a couple more.
Some are definitely sprouting out, but would you, like what, from what Tanner said, do we have a similar experience where if we posted long enough and also gave something new?
A lot of it is originality and then volume.
Yeah.
And the volume, I don't think is necessarily like, you know, TikTok or any of these platforms are like watching like, okay, they've done it for 9 months. Good. Let's turn on the flow. Let all people see them. Right. It's more of you're going to get lucky at some, like the more posts that you do at some point, some of those are going to hit.
And hopefully you get better over time.
Yeah. So it's more just you're putting yourself in a position to get lucky. That's at least how I see it. And then
buying more tickets to the lottery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's it. You know, if you have enough money for the lottery and you buy enough tickets, you're eventually going to win, right?
So
that's
indie authors are just gambling addicts. Wow.
Now, Ryan, you before we even started this call, you gave an interesting point of before even talking about marketing, it's a lot of it is what is the author trying to do when they go into this space? That's the unique thing about indie authors is you guys can have a multitude of motivations versus a traditional published. They're trying to, because they're traditionally published, they're trying to reach a larger audience. And like, you know, publishers breathing down their back of make it popular, make it popular, make it popular. So you want to get on that? Like, why did you start writing? How did you go about trying to sell your book? And what was your motivation?
Absolutely. So writing was the ticket to keep me from going insane. To set the stage, when I came up with the idea for the book, I was working full time, trying to start my own startup and doing part-time consulting to fund the startup. So I needed something that was a creative outlet that was just not 100% emails, Excel spreadsheets, and begging people to give me money for my startup. And I had gone through many creative outlets prior to this, Twitch streaming, woodworking, photography, and I monetized all of them and it ruined it. It killed the enjoyment. It turned it into a job, and it made something that I once enjoyed something that became a obligation that I no longer wanted to do. And so now I have a wood shop that has sat in my garage. I've got three cameras that sit on shelves, and I have three monitors and this nice microphone because of Twitch streaming. And it's come in handy now that I've wrote a book.
Nice.
But the gist of why I wanted to write was I needed a new creative endeavor, and I wanted to do something that fit the things that I liked and the things that I was good at. I was a technical writer for a little while, and I love sci-fi video games. I love sci-fi movies, and writing is the lowest barrier to entry creative project that you can do. Not everyone can do stop motion animation. There's just a little bit of a barrier to entry there. And so I wasn't a reader or a writer when I started. And so my goal was, this should be fun. Let's see how it goes. I was that guy who finished the book and essentially published it before it was finished, because I was still editing up until the last day it went live. Throughout the first crap. 6 months.
I'm double downing on my vouch for your book. I feel like it's going to be a masterpiece, actually. The thing is, like, I'm just saying, Ryan, that's
nothing,
the funniest
nothing
thing.
Nothing
to go,
makes
like,
a book
I just,
better
I
like
just,
procrastination and last minute edits.
Guys, like, I just published it. It was a shit show. But Ryan, what, by the end it became better, right? You edited it through, and obviously that wasn't there was more to the story. What's the additional to the story there?
So the first 6 chapters, the first half of the book, I was just a guy writing in present tense, past tense. I was making every mistake in the book, and my joke is I invented some mistakes. and then I found our Lord and Savior Brandon Sanderson. Watched his creative writing lectures probably 3 or 4 times, just listening to them instead of audiobooks or YouTube videos, just on my way to work, on my way home from work. And then the second half of the book, because I was learning the craft of writing, is significantly better. And so because I got better as the story went on, I started from the very beginning, and the beginning got a little bit better because I was a better writer. And then I got a little bit better. And 12 passes later, it is third person limited past tense 99% of the time. There's still the occasional, I left something in there and I just can't be bothered to go fix it because it's annoying. But now it's, I wrote the book because I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed it so much, I was like, I'm going to do this again. And so to tie this all back into marketing, how can I market this in a way that I enjoy? When I was doing my startup and when I was doing consulting, I had to do LinkedIn posts and blog posts and emails, and it was lifeless and there was no personality into it. There was no authenticity. I wasn't being my genuine self when doing that. And so what I found was, after I published this, a one-on-one connection was a much better marketing tool for me, because I'm able to sell myself, sell my motivations, sell why this story is important to me, which we can talk about later, and really get down to a fundamental of why this story might matter to you, and tell people from the very beginning, you might not like this if you don't connect with X, Y, and Z.
That's a great point. And so to something to compliment you on, what something you did do extremely well is networking. Like, the fact that you got in contact with us, we're having you on the podcast, like, says a load about not just your book, but you and all of you. So the fact that you guys, maybe even your social media presence isn't like, you guys don't have hundreds of thousands of followers. We're on BookTube. We're on BookTube. We're not the biggest BookTubers. Like, we can't get in contact with tons of people. So it's all just levels of this stupid social media game of who has more. Can you get somebody's attention? Can we feed off the likeness of somebody else? That's what I mean. A lot of podcasts are just getting on guests bigger than us, so we can. It's also exciting because we get to talk to authors. So besides the exciting and the part that we love it, Ryan, what you were able to do is by giving a personal connection in your book of saying, hey, democracy is cringe, teeter my totter. The kind of networking you did where I've seen Ryan Skeffington in both our comment section for a year, months to a year. Like, I've seen your name there tons of times when I'm reviewing comments. You've emailed us in the past. You've interacted with us on Twitter. Tanner posted a TikTok or an Instagram reel that was literally saying, hey, Austin and Richard, my name's Tanner. Like, he literally added us and said directly to us to get our attention on this networking thing where both of you watched our stuff, maybe forcibly, because you were like, yeah, you know what? This could be good one day to maybe get on the podcast, which totally get it. Like, I know you guys might not like
us as people. We all use each other. That's the name of the game.
It's totally fine.
Use and abuse.
But the fact that you guys were able to network in that way, just as firsthand experience, to where, hey, you might not be able to sell your book to everybody, because Ryan, with your Lost Souls, I hope is the worst book you ever write because it's your first book. I mean, the audience ought to give the author, the personality, a more chances to, hey, this is their first book. They're only going to get better, and buy the person essentially. Because a lot of what you're doing is selling yourself, networking yourself. And I just wanted to gear into that of where Rich and I, a lot of booktubing is networking as well. So with Ryan and Zach, Tanner, whoever wants to go into kind of a networking aspect, how important is that? Forget the social media presence, getting the numbers, just going to certain events maybe. Is it interacting with different people, not just the public, not just posting someone so everyone sees it, but more personal? Like, hey, I'm going to talk to Austin Rich. I'm going to go do this. How important is that in the marketing game?
I'd love to leap off onto that.
Yeah, please.
There's a novel called 1,000 True Fans. And the premise of it is you don't need 1 million people who will give you $1 one time. If you get 1,000 people who will give you $10 every 6 months, you can then do something for the rest of your life with your 1,000 true fans. And my goal isn't to make money with these books. It's a hobby. But for a person who is trying to build their foundation of readership, buying the author, like you said, is the way to do it. That's long-term, sustainable. It allows for forgiveness, because if someone reads your novel only seeing an Instagram ad where they saw the cover and they're like, this cover's sick, and then buys it, reads it, hates it, one-star review, there's no incentive for them to be more forgiving.
Right.
And so if you can build that solid foundation of a personal connection, that is one of the beautiful things about social media, Discord, Patreon. You can connect with your audience in a way that J.K. Rowling could not when Harry Potter came out, when every single 10-year-old was going to the midnight movie premiere. There was no way for her to give them a message and say, I hope you have a wonderful time. Enjoy the magic. We have that opportunity.
That's a great point. Zach, I see you're nodding your head a bunch there. Yeah. You totally agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I mean, the fact of the matter is when, when you're trying to get this book out there, you want it to connect with the right readers, right? So owning what it's about is such a huge thing. And owning who you are is such a huge thing, because when people that are like-minded connect with you, you get that base foundation of people who are and will back you, who are like, no, I'm about this. This is great. I'm with you. And then you will get the trolls. You will get the people who hate it. You will get the people who it's just not their jam. And that's okay. That's fine. That they're going to slip through the cracks. But if you can do all you can to connect with the right people, I mean, then you're killing it, right? Then you got people who do back you for years to come. I had a guy, I got a message just last night. He's a guy who's been reading my books since, Stone and Sky came out last August, right? And he's like, dude, I just finished the third one and this and that. And I'm just like so emotional and this and that. And I love this. And I hope that you're going to do something with this someday. And it just like, it's so cool to get those kind of messages because you've connected with these people. And there's so many of them too now at this point, when you start connecting on a personal level in the comments, just like you were saying, when you're commenting on different things and you're commenting with different authors who are doing something similar to you, or they got a similar vibe with you, then you've got friends in the game. I got people I text all the time, other authors that we just text all the time, because it's like, bro, I'm doing this, what do you think of this? Oh, well, it's good. Whatever. They could tell you if it's, I tried something like that, it didn't work. All these different connections are so vital. And that was something that I wasn't very good at, with the like one-on-one connections right out the gate, where it was like, it was kind of content heavy out the gate, trying to figure out how to do it. How to do it right. But then it quickly turned like, oh no, this is about connecting and connecting with the right people and connecting with people who not only readers, but also other authors and other people who are in the space, who will be your friend and who will be a champion next to you, who will go into battle with you. So I totally agree with all of those sentiments.
Great point. Yeah. Rich, what would you say to that?
A specific question I want to pass along to you guys is, depending on not just your book genre, but like specifically your type of book, do you have any type of angle that you find that marketing is, that you have to market it a little differently? For like Tanner, you have a Dragon Rider series. How did you find, is there a certain angle that you go like, hey, look, people who are in fans of Dragon Rider fantasy, I have to angle it a certain way. Are they more visually intact, or do they want comparisons to other type of Dragon Rider things? I only say this in the sense of I'm looking at bigger genres like romantasy. Probably wouldn't, like, we don't read a lot of romantasy here. It's definitely, but it on TikTok, it's marketed differently. It's a different style of video than what we do.
For sure, yeah.
And so I'm wondering if you guys have any insight on, due to your book genre, you market a little differently.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been telling everyone that there's enemies to lovers and a ton of sex, and there's none of that in my book, but my numbers have been
my ratings have gone way down.
My views have gone up, but my ratings have gone down.
And that's why we're here for your views.
Yeah.
No, I think you guys kind of touched on it earlier, and I think Zach touched on it as well. Just talking about books that are similar to your books obviously are going to attract the people that you think are going to enjoy your stuff. And kind of back on the last point, with I've just kind of accepted that social media for me is a tool to make friends. And I think more so than like, hey, read my book, look at my book, connecting with someone one-on-one has been the most fruitful for me on social media. It's why I'm on this call. It's why I've seen more and more reviews of Titan's Nest popping up on people's channels. And it's not because I'm like, hey, this book's fantastic. It's because I'm engaging with their stuff. I'm incredibly charming. That's a joke. As my wife says, annoyingly
your hair is
persistent.
Properly coiffed. It shows. Yeah.
I'm in pursuit of the perfect coif, so thank you for noticing. So just engaging with people personally and like trying to make friendships. Obviously not so much like I'm trying to use these people, but I've actually, as I said, I was like notorious for being like, I'm never gonna be on social media, I never want to be an Insta baddie, whatever that looks like. And I've been really pleasantly surprised with the friends that I've made and the engagement I've had with people being super encouraging. And that stemmed from like, I'm talking about, like Aragon. I think everybody's gateway drug to fantasy was Aragon, or at least for Dragon Rider fans. Right. And so talking about Aragon, and that's brought people in, and then trying to engage with those people, and just making friendships has been super fruitful for me.
Honestly, when we had Nicholas Eames on, who we thought his book titled.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh my goodness. I'm not even going to rescue on this one.
No, don't rescue me. I'm gonna think of
Kings
it.
Kings of the Wild, it's, you said it was
Kings,
made.
Thank you. Thank you for rescuing. Yes.
You should have let him stew there a little bit.
Yeah, I should have let him sweat.
But Kings of the Wild, apparently, like, my favorite, well, the reason I couldn't remember it is I thought it was a very mid book. And Rich and I were very much thinking, you know, it's just a book. And some people love it, but it's a book. And after talking with Nicholas Eames, having that one-on-one with him, I look back, I still don't love the book, but I like Nicholas Eames a lot. So I almost think back to my reading experience, like, ah, who cares what I thought about it? I'll read his following books because... cool. We had a connection with them. Mm-hmm. Whereas you all have an advantage as indie authors. For anybody who wants to go out and read your book, you'll most likely, I don't want to speak for all of you, but I'd assume so, they can connect with you and you'll be very responsive. And they can read your book, and you'll, whether you're critical or praising their book, they're going to likely see it. And I mean,
if they DM you, there's a much higher likelihood of engagement versus J.K. Rowling or, you know, even Nicholas Eames. Though Nicholas Eames less, like, there's levels to it, but you can't DM Brandon Sanderson and get a response back of like going, man, I really love Adeline as a character. Where do you think you're going to take him in the next? That's not going to happen.
No, but we're with all of you, I imagine you get that interaction way more. So the one-on-one, when you're trying to talk to people to get to read your book, that's a two-way street. So you guys can get all these readers to contact you, and you probably see a lot of the reviews. We won't get into all that, but that's a whole nother conversation.
Well, I actually did want a hard segue.
Go on that, yeah.
Hard segue. Into the idea of Amazon and Amazon marketing. And I wanted to hear, what has been your guys' experience dealing with the big behemoth? Because I know there are exclusive rights deals, and if you have an ebook on Amazon, if you're exclusive to them, they'll give you some marketing push. What has been your experience?
Getting told don't buy ads until you have 3 books out. Avoid it at all costs because it's a money sink.
Is that true? So paid ads don't work unless you have 3. Is that a rule of thumb to have 3 out first?
General guidance.
I heard that for sure, yeah, as well.
Okay.
And I do have 3 books out now at this point, 4 that people can buy. And it's like, you know, I go to, even then, Amazon ads is tough because you gotta, it's kind of a perpetual motion beast. So you already have to have some like motion going before your ads actually start taking off anyways. And so doing Amazon ads early is kind of a time and money suck, to be honest. That's been my experience anyways with it.
Well, Tanner, I know your audiobook at the very least is it your ebook was exclusive to Audible, or ebook is exclusive to Amazon? The audiobook is the only one exclusive. Okay. Yeah. Right. I was having trouble trying to rip the DRM from it. Sorry.
Okay.
I was trying to buy it through Libro.fm and it wasn't available and it made me upset.
Oh, interesting.
So I had to buy it through on Amazon.
Oh. Well, like I said, I have no idea what I'm doing. So it might be exclusive to Amazon. I wouldn't even know. But I will give a plug to a positive on Amazon that was actually super helpful for me, is the ACX program, which is the Audio Creative Exchange. So if someone like me who doesn't have a ton of cash to throw at my creative projects, so ACX, if your book's listed on Amazon, you can list it on ACX, and professional audio producers and voice actors can audition and read your book and they'll send you the first chapter. If you like what they do, you give them a thumbs up. And the coolest part is you can do like a traditional contract where you pay them up front, however much you want to agree upon, or you can do the royalty share program, which I actually did, where I don't pay anything up front with the voice actor. We just split the royalties. And for someone like me, who, like, I know I'm not going to make, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars off my audiobooks yet, just because I don't have the audience. I'm just trying to get my work in front of as many people as I can. That was perfect for me. And it was actually like incredibly easy. And I was really impressed with how well it's done. And I think too, it's like, it kind of doubles your market. I mean, audiobooks are huge. And I have a lot of friends that are like, oh, that's so cool that you wrote a book. Like, I just can't like really read books. I like only do audio stuff. So I felt like I kind of doubled my market by going through the ACX program. So if you're a new indie author, I would recommend at least checking it out, because if your book's already on Amazon, it's super easy, super user friendly.
That's a good point.
I'd like to double up on that actually, because I went through ACX as well to do my audiobooks. And you know, if you're willing to do a little legwork to go and find somebody at a lower price tier, like a narrator at a lower price tier, like there's so many narrators out there. If you're willing to go and actually find them and, you know, sort some things out, search it up, find somebody in a lower tier, find good quality, all that, find somebody who vibes with you and what you're trying to do. I mean, you can do it relatively affordable compared to what I know other authors have done. And audiobooks has been a huge game changer, you know, on my end for sales on Amazon. I think it's like, I double, my audiobook sales double my ebook and paperback and hardcover every month. So, so far over the last couple months anyway. So,
same, but I went from like 4 books to 8 books. That's wild.
Oh, I mean, so I guess it takes it's like 2/3 of my Amazon sales is audiobooks then, because
holy crap.
Yeah, it's significantly, I mean, it's a significant way that Amazon actually, you can make some progress on Amazon.
Yeah. And maybe a part of that, because Tanner, you were referring to earlier how 11,000 books come out a year and, mm-hmm. or sorry, a day, not a year, it's in the millions. I read it was 4 to 5 million. I don't know if that 11,000 tracks out to that, but different sites will say anywhere from 500,000 to 5 million books a year, 11,000 a day. Insane. Where audiobooks, they're significantly less published per day, significantly less. I don't know the exact number. Do you guys have any insight on just the audiobook market versus physical book market, and how is there less competition audiobook wise?
Definitely less competition for sure. A lot less. I can't give you the exact numbers, but for example, I think about some of the, a lot of the indie author friends that I have a bunch of their physical books, and half the time, because I got 4 kids, like I'm doing this thing full time, you know, trying to write more books, trying to do all the marketing, trying to do all these things, and you're like, I also got to read at some point in here, right? And so audiobooks are like, they've saved my bacon the last 2 years. But not only that, you see that on like Bookstagram and BookTok and everywhere else, because these Bookstagrammers are reading 200 something books a year, and you're like, dude, come on, like it's crazy. But it's because they listen to audiobooks, right? And so the audiobook market, I think it's just gonna flywheel and just keep going, even get even bigger. But I think it's because of that, because people want to read more books but have less time, more people are going, hey, this one has an audiobook, I'm gonna go give it a try. It was on my TBR anyways. I'm going to give that one a try since it's an audiobook. So
they also have the casino effect of most people don't buy audiobooks with money. They buy it with a credit. And, you know, when you're spending a credit, you're not spending money. It's like, oh, give it a shot. It's free. Why not? It feels like it's free. Even though it's not, it feels like it's free. So you're willing to give just something a shot.
Exactly.
And as long as the in your head is it long enough to be worth a credit? Like you go, you know, like I could spend a credit on a 3-hour book, but I would rather spend it on a nice 25-hour book.
Yeah, is that a thing you guys think about with how long your book is? Because what Rich is saying, like, hey, if it's a 3-hour audiobook, maybe not going to get it.
Versus, a paperback book. Like, physical, I'll try out your book.
Quick novella, why not, right? Yeah. So when you're writing your books in your head, did you go, okay, I'm cut? Because if we look at the difference, Lost Souls, Ryan, your book is on the novella side, I'd consider that.
Oh, completely written in about an afternoon.
In an afternoon. Whereas Zach and Tanner's books are more regular size, I'd say, novels.
Regular fantasy size.
Regular fantasy,
Let's be fair. Most most books in every other genre are closer to Ryan's.
Right. Yeah. Well,
go ahead and stand them up next to each other.
We actually did, but they fell over pretty early on.
Sideways. Mine is 6x9. And 11-point font, because if I make the text smaller and use less pages, I get a higher royalty.
Oh.
So it's 103,000 words.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, that's a normal book.
That's actually over the limit for traditional published authors.
Yeah. So okay. Wow, you tricked us. That, yeah. Yes. Okay.
That's so embarrassing for you guys.
Oh, that's tricky.
So bad. Oh my God.
He just swerved us.
That's so
trickster.
Yeah.
Oh, that is.
That's why they were making fun of me the whole time, because they knew it was coming back to me.
I did. Man, you did yours in like Times New Roman MLA formatting. This is crazy. You got it. This is working out. But Ryan, for you, when you had 100,000 versus Tanner and Zach, do you have your numbers on top of your head for how long your books are?
Yeah, 121,000 for each book in the trilogy, all within 400 words of each other.
Whoa! Wow. Wait, you did that on purpose?
Just built it.
I couldn't help it.
That's psychological. That's incredible. Thing for me. I just imagine book three ends way too soon.
You had an extra, you had a banger chapter in there. You're like, I'm so sorry, little one.
Little one.
Yeah.
Tanner, how long is yours?
I think book one's like 150 something, and then book two's at 160 something, and book two's not out yet. Coming out this year.
I was gonna ask, when was book two coming out? I was waiting.
Yeah, I don't have a hard date. The goal is this year.
George Martin over here. Whoa!
I know.
Just delaying it.
I do think too, and I've read some things. Sometimes I wish that I was going. I just don't have it in me. I just get excited about an idea. But I think there's a lot of research done that like smaller indie books, obviously the ability to just pump out a ton of them is going to be more lucrative. And so I think that's really interesting. Sometimes I kick myself. I'm like, I wish I wasn't going so thick, but it's just what I'm passionate about, unfortunately. So unfortunately. So I do think, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that, but I've heard that like, intentionally going for like a 180 page book and just doing 9 books in the series or whatever and pumping them out is actually like a great tactic from what I've heard.
There's kind of like two sides of it, right? So you talk to somebody like Andy Peliquin, right? And he and I were talking about this where, you know, his books are getting thicker and he writes chunkers already, right?
Yeah.
His books are getting thicker because he also puts them on KU. And so he gets page reads and he gets money for the amount of page for every page that's read, right? And so you look at like, you know, Ryan Cahill's books are, you know, getting chunky, right? Some of those guys who are on KU really lean into like they really lean into the page number, page count, because you're going to get paid more if somebody reads the whole book, right? And it's 700 pages versus, you know, 400 pages. Whereas if you're not in KU and you're wide like I am, well, actually, maybe those shorter books are a better way to go because you're pumping them out. You got more books to offer to people and people can read them in a timely manner, which gets them excited. And they're excited that they can cross one off of their TBR and they can add it to their, you know, yearly reading goal, you know? There's two sides really. It's like, do you want to go all out and write these, you know, 300,000 word novels, or do you want to go, you know, 120 or less is probably my jam, right? So, and even less is better in some cases for that. So,
and Sanderson, I know, gives. Sorry, Rich, you had something there.
Oh, but when we talked to Brian McClellan, he actually said, but per hour of working time, like he made more for on his
like
short,
no
significantly more like, on his novellas,
yeah,
way more, and it actually is more. That's kind of his process now, is like for the money he makes some novellas and then he writes the big chunk of books for the, you know, for his bigger personal enjoyment and keeping the fan base kind of happy, because that's what you're there for, is the big long series, so that's your kind of loyal fan base. But just pure money, his novellas apparently made way more money.
And that goes to say with, so with Brian McClellan, Sanderson has that, he said it somewhere. I don't know if it was his lectures or he was sitting this on his YouTube channel, but he was saying that with Stormlight, and he's able to write these huge chonker books and know they'll be successful, people trust Sanderson. He's had so many books beforehand. Obviously, people are going to go into a 400,000 book and go like, oh, I've read tons. Like, he's the best. Of course I can read this. Whereas you all have this thing, hey, they're being introduced to you. Can I write a 200,000 plus word novel and get away with that? Or should you keep in your minds, maybe keep it closer to 100,000 at first? Tanner, you were right in between there, 150, but with, again, like you said, unfortunately, that it's where your passion lies. So obviously do with the story you want to do, but if we're just keeping it to marketing, like, hey, if we were all soulless, if we were all lost souls, essentially, if we just didn't care, then you could write a 40,000 book novella and then line up your passions with hopefully selling more.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Green, he started off, his first book was a novella. The name of it.
Neon Breach Ghosts?
Breach of Peace.
That was his first.
Breach of Peace was his first published work. Mm-hmm. I believe indie published on that one. That's a nice, real, real short. I wouldn't say it's a novella. It's like a short story.
But I think he had the audience already to where he could have written anything and people would have bought it as well.
But his second book is a regular length book.
Yeah, I'm curious what if he had any of those thought process going in too. So our special guest, Daniel Green, coming out of nowhere. Oh my God. But that word count for most of you.
Kept him hanging in the wings for a whole 45 minutes.
That would be he's here for 2 minutes and then just dips out. But for all of you writing that, so Tanner, you said, unfortunately, like, hey, I just wanted to write a book this long. No, didn't seem like any of you constricted to how much you'd write. Other than Zach, you just wanted the nice symmetry with your trilogy.
Can you explain that to us?
What is going on in your demented mind?
I had a goal that I was like, I want to hit at least 100,000 words. That's what I want to hit. First one went to like 127. And then after all the edits, we went through like 3-4 rounds of edits with different editors. And mm-hmm. once it was all cut down, it was 121,000 words. Second book, and I think this is actually like a sign that I was getting better because I was getting a lot tighter going in. So like the second book had like 125,000 words. After all the edits came down, it was 121,000 words within like 200 words of the first book or something stupid. Mm-hmm. I was like, what? How did that happen? Okay, whatever. So the next one, I was like, we'll aim for around there, whatever. It ended up being like 123,000 words, went through all the edits, came back out 121,000 words, all within like 400 words of each other. And I was like, I don't know. The one, the most recent one that I wrote that's coming out in March, that one's 67,000 words. So, I mean, I don't
know. Okay, you broke tradition.
Like, whatever. It's, okay. I don't get it.
Zach, do you have your short story collection on you?
Yeah, I got one here somewhere.
So
this guy right here.
Yep. So that's the short story collection. I think there's 6 or 7 of those bad boys. And going back to Ryan Cahill, Ryan Cahill wrote a novella, The Fall, I believe it's called. And you give mm-hmm. someone a small taste of whatever it is you want them to try your novel. And they're like, oh, I like that. I'd like another, please. Mm-hmm. And so with Ryan Cahill, you sign up for his newsletter, you get The Fall for free. And then you get the Behemoth Weapons, thick, chunky books. When you want more of it, you're willing to pay $19.99 for paperback, $30 for the hardcover.
That's good.
And so I'm here to criticize Richard and Austin for their $10 a month Patreon, which is asinine. I just want to come and hang out. I want a little taste. I asked for an invitation to the Discord, a free, no commitment here. Try something. Let me ease you into the ecosystem. And then I can shell out my $10 a month. So
I was gonna piggyback off what you said there and go like, hey, with our channel, we do short form content, TikToks, 1 minute clips, brings them to full podcast episode right. brings to totally. Patreon. So ours is kind of free short to free video to paid Patreon. However, we have mulled over with making a cheaper and less expensive Patreon tier. And the back and forth that we have here is So if we made it so a less expensive option with like a $2-3 tier, we want to be able to provide $2-3 worth of money as well. We don't have anything less than 10 or more than 10 that we feel like if someone paid us $2, we could basically be like, oh, you can look, I don't know what else we can offer between that. Like, what would you suggest, Ryan? What can we give?
Free general chat. So in Discord, you can have paid permissions. And so you can have two sides of your Discord where you funnel people into the Discord. You have announcements, you have notifications. I get y'all's email for Patreon once every 6 weeks, but every single day I'm on Discord. And if your notifications on the little left side with something new, I'm seeing y'all, I'm in Discord, I'm interacting with the community. And then you say, hey guys, we're doing book club next week. It's for Patreon members only. I'm already 50% there because I'm in the Discord. I just need the elite status of being Tudor Ramble Patreon.
We've talked about that too.
We have talked
and
about it.
I think a couple, not to go into, we won't talk about our Patreon for the rest of the episode, but after this, we'll tell you why we did the part. I guess, what do I get the short answer of why? Go ahead.
Short answer is the our community is a good, we don't have a lot of trolls because it's a high entry to the bar. Like, so we just didn't, and we have all these different aspects of it. We like the idea of you just pay $10 and everything in the Discord is, there's equality.
There's no keeping out, right?
Yeah, there's no in-group, out-group kind of weirdness. It's just everyone's there.
Just the peasantry is outside.
Exactly.
The peasantry is outside. Exactly. Where they belong.
If someone pays $10 per month, they're like going to use it and they're active and like, hey, they're going to be honest members. Whereas I feel, not that anybody paying $2, of course, go ahead, donate $2 for this. Do it. Give us money. But besides that being the case, just it's a barrier to entry. Like you're saying, with you made a book because it's the least barrier of entry. Our barrier of entry for the videos is, hey, check out the videos for free. But Ryan, we will seriously think about that because maybe there's something we can. Maybe. But I like the idea of just, hey, democracy's cringe. Don't listen to Ryan. Do what we want. I also like that. So, but to give a soft segue, not a hard one, softer segue,
okay,
with all of your guys' books, the big thing and the big issue with marketing, I feel as well, as we've touched on, is how can I trust Zach, Tanner, Ryan, how can I trust you guys? You're all indie authors. Maybe as a reader, I have this preconceived notion that it's not traditionally published, wasn't good enough to get trad published. So they had to indie publish this. And there's a lot of negative connotations that come into play. There's someone thinking that, okay, how can I sacrifice X hours of my time for a complete shot in the dark? Let's say they know nothing about you, nothing about your book or your name, and you have to give their attention. Essentially giving this time to talk to those audience members who might be feeling that right now and give a quick pitch for all three of your books. And I want to see, first off, actually, let's make you pick, Rich. Democracy's Cringe. Which book in the raffle gets to go first?
Let's start reverse order that we started with. Ryan, you want to give us a pitch of your book?
Your book's Lost Souls.
Absolutely. We will go worst to first in this order. my book is not traditionally publishable because it's not good. But what I can tell people is that it is a character-driven sci-fi with a young main protagonist who is trying to conquer the expectations of his father and his grandfather, find his path and pursuit in the world. It's a slow burn in the beginning as I set up the foundation of the story. It has 5 POVs, and so you get to explore the world. There's a caste system, so you get to see it from every angle and every elevation. And it ends in a very fast-paced bang that kicks us off into the sequel, which is coming out later this year or early 2025.
And to give the first paragraph of your book, the title of chapter 1 is Samsara, Existence is Suffering. And here's the first paragraph of Ryan's book says, in the first moments after rebirth, when all those around him writhed on the floor in agony, the youngest traveler on the vessel leaned forward onto the wall that contained him and vomited a thin mustard yellow foam. 3 years into Cairo Freeze ended more abruptly than he could have ever imagined. His heart beat like a battering ram trying to break his ribcage, struggling to escape. His unused muscles shredded with every twinge of movement. That is the beginning of Lost Souls by Ryan Skeffington. Again, all these will be in the description below. And you got Tanner fanning over that one. That was, Ryan, for you editing that 12 times, that paragraph, you must have worked on that one. That was great.
The first sentence was a banger.
You got it. You got to always work on the first paragraph.
I saw people doing the let's read the first sentence of fantasy and sci-fi. So I was like, I need that first sentence to be put just in case I get on one of those YouTube videos.
Yes. Oh, that's good. So Tanner, do you want to go ahead and pitch your Titan's Nest TD Oro?
Sure. Titan's Nest. I think something I'm really proud of with Titan's Nest is there's a lot of spins on a lot of the kind of regular dragon rider tropes. And it follows a young man and his relationship with his brother. And the concept is that dragon hatchlings bite young adults and they give them a different elemental power. And if they're chosen, they get to go and train at Titan's Nest to train as a bitten knight. And it follows a couple different perspectives. And the question arises, are the bitten knights actually the heroes or are they the villains? It's kind of up for the reader to decide as they get these different perspectives. And that's my pitch. Unless Richard wants to add to it.
So I'll read the first paragraph of the book here. Or roughly first paragraph. I don't know.
Your first paragraph is four words. We got to go beyond the first paragraph.
Yeah.
Not too far. Yes, Mum. Maximus yelled over his shoulder as he darted off away from the tavern. And be back before sunfall. We know, Maximus said as he batted his hair in the air. And stay within the wall. The sun has already begun its descent behind the woods. We only had an hour or so until darkness swallowed the north, and Maximus had no intention of staying within the wall. Keep up, Darren, he commanded. I struggled to match his pace.
There we go. And starting off, the difference there already, where you have it starting off with dialogue, Ryan has the more sci-fi kind of starting within a very... not ominous is the wrong word. You start with prose, a paragraph, rather than getting us right into dialogue. So I already see two very distinct styles there.
Yeah.
It's up for you, the audience. Maybe just buy both of them and then ignore Zach's and we'll just cut the video off now.
I also will say now, this month I read Fourth Wing. And just to throw it out there, I significantly enjoyed your book more than Fourth Wing, Tanner. I don't know if that is... just because romancy ain't my thing.
They both have dragons.
From my understanding, that's a low bar, but I'm still honored that you said that.
No, the main thing is with Fourth Wing has a lot of the dragon rider tropes that I went in and I was like, I know what this is going to be. I know the story. I get it. And I was right. I was 100% right on where everything was going. With your book, I also thought the same thing. I was going, okay, I've read this type of story before. I know. And then things didn't go in this direction I thought it was going to go. And it was thoroughly fun in that direction. It's like, okay, there's a bunch of different tropes we're going to twist and put on its head, which was fun for me.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, I liked your point of taking a twist on what you normally see.
With Dragon, awesome. So that is Tanner. I feel like Rich just. I mean, you gotta say the same thing now.
I can't
about
say anything about. Yeah, you I can only lie. Say what I've read. Read it, then I would say the things. Yeah. But.
Zach, do you want to go ahead and pitch? You have three. Your fourth book's coming out in March. But
I feel obligated now to add these to my TBR this month.
I mean, come on.
Okay.
I'm already.
Well, don't do it, man. So there you go.
Don't do it.
Lonesome Dove is so thick. I'm so...
Zach, do you want to go ahead and pitch Stone and Sky? It's a trilogy, correct?
Yeah, it's awesome. Stone and Sky trilogy. So I always use the words classic style epic fantasy adventure series because that's exactly what it is. But we've got Griffin Riders. So it all started with I was in the military. I was in the Air Force. I flew. I always had, military aircraft around. And I was like, man, fantasy needs more like races with like aerial militaries. And I was like, okay, let's go. So we went with humans ride griffins, orcs ride wyverns, and elves ride pegasi. And then of course I had to create something for the dwarves. And so they ride these things called Garvox, which are basically
panther-like creatures with bat-like wings, which are super dope, and they have crazy cool magic and all that stuff. But anyways, point is, classic style epic fantasy adventures. We're talking, you know, old school, found family, going on an adventure, finding out that there's some mysteries that they didn't know were going on, and trying to defeat an epic sorcerer. And we got multi POV, obviously, because we got orcs on the front cover of that one. So we even follow some orcs along the way in this series, which is super fun. And again, I just wanted to bring back those classic old school fantasy vibes when you read it, like the ones you used to read back when you were young, right? The ones you remember reading. And so that's kind of what I went for. And people keep saying that it hit that. So that's great. But easy point of entry for you, the Stone and Sky Preludes Collection. I actually give it away to people for free. There's seven stories in here about seven different characters that you meet in Stone and Sky, including some orcs. So there you go. So if you like orcs, you're definitely going to like these books. But you can totally get these for free at freefantasyfiction.com, which is way easier to spell than zsdiamante.com. So freefantasyfiction.com. And again, easy point of entry, totally free. And you can read those and figure out if you like the vibe and you're feeling it.
Excellent. Do you want to give the vibe of the first paragraph?
I'm going to give the first paragraph here.
Oh, yeah.
The smell of smoke hung in the air, and a bitter iron taste lingered in Orin's mouth. He opened his eyes to darkness and saw nothing at first. He peered into the night sky, refocused his vision until he saw stars brilliantly displayed far above him. He lay still, wondering whether to move. He couldn't tell if he had heard singing or if his mind was creating the folk ballad for his benefit. It was almost peaceful. Until, out of the corner of his eye, he saw dancing lights. Torches.
And if you guys didn't know, all of Zach's first paragraphs are the exact same word count and chapters as well. I mean, it's incredible. It's just, guys, all fantastic openings. And I hope everybody gives a shot to your books, checks them out. All links in the description below, as we said. Of course, our Patreon is as well. We're a lot of selling today, but I hope that you all.
It's a video about marketing.
It's a marketing video.
I feel like we're obligated to market ourselves.
We have to a little bit in there.
A little bit.
And I hope that big thing that you all got out of this episode is where we're going to have this roundtable series is we want a way to incorporate indie authors to give us their insights, but also promote their books. I think as booktubers, it's an important thing to do, but also
comment down below on other indie authors that you guys have read and you would want to see featured on here. Let us know and we'll try and reach out to some more people.
Absolutely. And these are the kind of videos we're more passionate about. So hopefully it does well. So the algorithm encourages it. And a quick sign off, Zach, do you want to have any final words? We'll give you all a final word or phrase. Zach, what do you want to say to the audience?
Marketing is hard and it sucks. Isn't that the title of this video?
Exactly. No. Tanner, do you want to end more positively or do you want to double down on the negativity?
I would gladly double down. Marketing is a nightmare. But hey, if you reach out, I'd be honored to meet you. Thanks for tuning in.
Hell yeah. And Ryan, of course, I feel like we bullied Ryan a lot. Ryan, end us off.
Absolutely. So I'm doing a buddy read at Andrew's Wizardly Reads Discord. Don't go to Tudor Ramble's paid Patreon. Go to his free Discord. Lost Souls will be free, and you get a free arc for Eternal Dreams. See you there.
Fair play. Fair play.
Darn.
See y'all next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye all.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.